Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up, the SPFL is back as Killy Pye Rangers, Celtic Kirk County and the Buddies bash Hibs. This is Spartans. We hear from the young team creating the outstanding atmosphere to the SPFL's newest club. And could Hibs bend McGinn? We preview some of the mouth-watering European ties after UEFA's playoff draw. Hello, I am your host, Andrew Slavin, and we are about to dissect the opening weekender of the Scottish Premiership season. No leagues are won on day one, although there are 9 months of the season of wonder and mayhem that will be bestowed upon us by Celtic have probably wrapped up the title already, eh? Joining me on the podcast once again, she is the bastion of Scottish football from East Kilbride, but working for the westest of hams. It's senior football producer Laura Brannan, and he's the Paisley Piper bossing down under. He's the head of creative at Melbourne City FC, Finlay Marks. Did I get that right, Finlay? Are you the head of creative or head of everything?
To all intents and purposes, yeah, sure.
Why not? Works for you.
I don't think I've ever been referred to as the Paisley Piper, though. I'm quite a big fan of that. I might put that in my Twitter bio. Thanks for that, Andrew.
Before we get into this week's news, though, guys, we need to follow up on a really good story that came up last week involving Raith Rovers and their new kit, which commemorated their 100-year anniversary of the first team being shipwrecked on the way to Canary Islands, a story you really loved, Finn. Club historian John Greer got in touch with us after he listened to the podcast and watched it on YouTube. And this is brilliant. You should check out this chat I had with him. John Greer, Raith Rovers historian. Absolutely brilliant to have you on the podcast. Shame that Laura and Finn can't make it, but we were delighted that you got in touch with us after our first podcast of the season, after our discussion on kits and all this stuff, and it was all the weird and wonderful, but Raith Rovers came up and Finn was loving this story about the club being shipwrecked, and we had no idea what the historical significance of it was, but you got in touch with us and gave us the full spiel, and it was even better with than the crumbs that we had. So please tell the listeners from the start to the end as best as you can, and I'll try not to interrupt you.
good stuff. Well, in 1922, Raith Rovers finished third in the Scottish League behind Celtic and Rangers. And the first year they went on a tour to Denmark. So they played a Danish sort of international team and lost. And then they played another game, which I think they drew. So it was quite a successful tour. So they came back. The following season they finished eighth in the league. So they dropped a wee bit, but they decided that it was a successful tour. It was also a way of making money for the club at the time. So 1923 in June, they set off from Tilbury Docks. It was a squad of 13 players, 5 directors, and the manager, James H. Logan. So they set off from Tilbury Docks in London. They went on a ship called the Highland Loch, which was from the Nelson Shipping Group. And they set off and they had a great time. I think Alec James in his book tells of the players being great. They had great japes on the ship. They were on a ship that was going ultimately to Argentina, so they were on that ship, and the cargo was chilled beef. So maybe that tells you something of the age we were in.
Was that it? Was there anything else? No fruit?
No, there was other passengers as well. Raith Rovers and chilled beef seemed to go together quite well. So they were just through the Bay of Biscay on the Sunday, the 1st of July, and they hit rocks there. There was a hole in the hull of the ship. So they managed to get into the lifeboats, but the good thing was, being good chivalrous footballers, they managed to get all the women and children, as the famous saying is, get the women and children into the boats first. So they were taken away on the lifeboats, and then the players went. The ship was then patched up, and they kind of limped their way into the city of Vigo in Spain.
They got back on?
Aye, they got back on, which I'm not sure I would have done. They got into Vigo, and then they picked up another ship that was going the direction that they were going in. So they, when they got on the second ship, the captain asked the players to dine with him at his table, because he'd heard the story of the shipwreck, but also the fact that they'd been good mariners and helped the ladies and children into the lifeboats first. They finally arrived in Las Palmas in the Canaries, and they went on to play 6 matches there, winning all matches. It was one of their games there. One of their strikers, called Cornelius Healy, got sent off, and he refused to leave the pitch. So 2 policemen drew swords and marched him off the pitch. But it gets better, because the Raith Rovers, I don't know if it was the directors or the travelling party, certainly appealed to the British embassy there, and they were given an apology for the sending off. So
wow,
that must have been the 1922 version of VAR.
Jeez, oh, brilliant.
You know, nowadays, that's what's lacking in Scottish football. Somebody called Cornelius, isn't it?
Totally, that's a strong name, that. But I do like the idea of the British government getting involved in Raith Rovers' behalf, giving them some sort of diplomatic immunity, letting them run riot in the Canaries.
So they won 6 matches, and one of the players, Tom Jennings, scored 11 goals in the 6 games, which was quite amazing. But I've got the shirt here, and your colleague the other day said it's a very plain shirt, which I have to say, no, it's not. It's got the islands of the Canaries on it. So this story, when it was brought out, the shirt, a couple of weeks ago, since then, the whole story's gone viral. Las Palmas, we're in the top division of Spanish football. Mm-hmm. We share a former player with them.
Paquito Ortiz.
Yes. And Paquito was an excellent player for us. He kindly did a video for us sitting in Las Palmas' stadium. And since then, the story that I had published on the Rovers webpage has been translated into Spanish. La Liga have printed stories about it. Las Palmas, well, they're going to sell our shirt in their superstore.
Amazing.
There's been about 50 shirts sold in Spain, mainland and into the Canaries.
That's amazing, John. Absolutely amazing.
To honour the connection between the two clubs, you know, there is talks going on about having a friendly with them, so a lot of people are getting excited about, because the last time Raith Rovers played in Europe was when we were in Munich, obviously.
Aye, I was going to say.
So we're all excited about that. There has been some quips about, if the game does go ahead, we're not going to go by ship anyway.
Yeah, although it'd be quite nice to even go somewhere else in the Canaries and then get a boat across. It's quite easy to jump about all the islands.
You know, the good thing about the story is, until recently, many Raith Rovers supporters knew the story, but it's not been talked about wildly, you know, with Scottish football.
Well, it caught us all by surprise, I have to say, especially Finn.
Yes, and the thing is, the shirt has sold out now. There's 780, I was told, shirts have sold. it's a drama waiting to be made, you know. Maybe James Cameron, that he could do that as a sequel to Titanic, you know.
Yeah, with a happy ending at least this time.
I don't know about happy ending. That's not a really good scene, is it?
You won all your games in the Canary Islands. It's a happy ending. And some drama with swords being drawn. My goodness.
Yeah, so it's quite a remarkable story, isn't it?
Brilliant, John. I love that. I really appreciate you getting in touch with us.
Thank you very much.
If you missed that last week, by the way, you should check out our full run-through of the new SPFL kits on our YouTube page as well. A few funnies to talk about this weekend. Laura, can you kick things up for us?
My favourite one from the weekend was the fourth official at Celtic Park. Did you see him? So Colin Stephen needed to get some treatment after a wasp stung him.
How does that happen? How is an adult do you get stung by a wasp? I don't get it.
Well, you know, it's an
I've
open
stadium.
I've
been chased by a wasp.
Yeah, you get chased by them and you get like, you know, if you're having like food or drink, a picnic in a park or whatever, like they all come over and it's a pain in the tonsils. But like, I'm just like, you're a linesman, you've got, you know, he's the fourth official, wasn't it? But you still got, you can move. You've got a massive board. Why don't you hit it with that? I don't get it. You're outside. Run away. Man.
Get a big subs board swatting them.
This can't be a funny story, Laura. Poor lad got stung. You could get bad infections with that. I hope he's all right.
Pure cinch. Absolutely just, loved it.
Yeah. You just forget that, like, within the 90 minutes, it's actually a performance and real life things happen to these people. And you think, how are you going to cope with it? Yeah.
Unbelievable. Very good. Thanks. God, that was probably one of my best and you gave me nothing. Finn, any funnies?
Well, from one kind of classic cinch moment with a fourth official getting stung by a wasp to another, VAR didn't work in the St Johnson game because, of course, it didn't. It's like they've only had a couple of months to get everything tested and running properly and, nah, just don't need it. So that was great at the St Johnson game.
First day set the tone exactly how you want to continue.
Oh, dear. Well, there was some good news over the weekend as well. I mean, amazing stats coming out saying the likes of over 130,000 fans supporters going across the top four divisions. It's actually the second highest opening weekend since the inception of the SPFL. It's we all know we're great. We love our football, but it's just a great kind of, you know, success story that even in the opening day, there's so much excitement across Scottish football. Really looking forward to this season, I have to say. But the other one was James McArthur's retired as well. Plenty of caps for Scotland. A few goals. He won the FA Cup. It's a shame to see him retire. He's only 35, because I'm 35 in September, and I'm thinking, do I need to retire? Are my hopes over?
Probably. Still living that dream, aren't you?
I'll never let it go, Laura. I'll never, ever let it go.
I always rated James McArthur in the Scotland shirt. I thought he was a really good player. And I think from memory, he didn't score many goals, but when he did, they were always either kind of important or decent goals. I remember him scoring a bit of a screamer against Germany.
Sean Maloney sent it in.
And it was at a point where I think, was it to equalise at 2-2? I think we ended up losing the game, but I remember going absolutely tonto when he stuck that one and just being like, we never score goals from that far out. I mean, it shows you where we were as a team at that point, because now we score screamers all the time. So, you know.
He also scored in my first away win. I went 7 trips without seeing us score a goal, never mind win a game. And wow. Finally we did. We beat Northern Ireland 3-0 in the Nations Cup. And yeah, he scored that day. So he was part of my first away win.
Happy memories.
Thanks, James. Thanks for the memories.
We can't be having that, mate. You better get your finger out all right and make sure that you get the results.
Right, well, let's get stuck into our SPFL roundup. We'll all be focusing mostly on the Premiership this week. And we should really start at Celtic Park, where the flag was unfurled. James Forrest, the testimonial man, he got a happy day. And there is this question. I couldn't find any history on a flag day. Like, no one else does a flag day.
Did they not? Is that a Scottish thing?
I don't know. I mean, in the last episode, we spoke about the history of Raith Rovers getting shipwrecked and stuff like that, right? So now we've got a historian coming on to explain all of this about Raith Rovers. Maybe we need another historian to come on and talk about Flag Day, because I can't find fuck all about why we do a flag thing.
That reminds me, because obviously this time last year, working for West Ham, the first game of the season was against Man City, and it was at the London Stadium. And I remember saying, why are we not away? Why are Man City not at home for the first game of the season? Why are they not unfurling the flag? And I was kind of looked at like, what are you talking about? And I didn't actually realise this was not a worldwide thing. It's a very strange tradition. And you see, when you actually watch it, I mean, like, look at James Forrest standing at the edge of a pitch, fully kitted out, and he's doing this pulley on a flag, like he's lifting his washing up in his granny's house. And it isn't even like
it's
a wavy
rubbish,
flag,
isn't
and
it?
It's not. It's definitely. See if it was the flag on top of the stadium that is actually the one that flies for the season. That's a bit different, but you're kind of.
Well,
it's a very strange thing.
Dundee got to fly the flag as well because they had won the championship title, so they still got to fly a flag too. But I just don't know the history of it. But it was obviously a perfect day for Celtic, 4-2 winners over Ross County, but not the. Not the scintillating performance I think most Celtic fans were looking forward to, because Ross County gave them a decent game. Even scoring 2 goals at Celtic Park is some feat. So, yeah, that was good.
Hold on.
I know we're going to rattle through these Premiership games.
No, hold on. We need to talk about David Turnbull here. Not letting you move on that quickly. It's finally DT's time.
Okay. DT.
He's finally getting his chance. He's finally getting to play games. Brendan Rodgers seems to like him. And Matt O'Reilly seems to like him as well. His post-match comments were very good. So if anyone heard this, basically had a little dig at Ange Postecoglou for not playing David Turnbull last season and before, saying that he's too good not to play games. And of course he should be playing. And he's absolutely right. And look what happens when he does play. And he's only got a season left in his contract. So hopefully now is his time to kind of make his mark. Whether he then extends his contract or gets a move, whether before the transfer window closes, probably unlikely at this stage, but even in January, now's his chance to really kind of pick up where his last couple of seasons has kind of tailed off.
I really hope he does, because he's obviously an exceptionally talented player, a player that you know really well, Laura, from your time at Motherwell, and you made the documentary on his comeback. But because I think when he first moved to Celtic, he was almost kind of seen as part of like that rebuild. This is pre-Postecoglou, but there were really high hopes for him. And then Postecoglou came in and splashed the cash and built this entire new team. And basically Turnbull's role was turned into bit part player. And you knew, I always used to make jokes, mostly to kind of like rile you up a little bit, but I'd be like, oh, the game must be over because Turnbull's come on as a sub. Like, that was always the mark of the game's finished and they're just seeing it out and getting minutes in the leg for their squad players. But I really hope it is a marker. I don't know how much better a marker you can make to score a brace in the opening day. Like, and it's really important in terms of his career, not just his career, but I think, his club career, but internationally as well, because really he should be looking to try and make an impression to try and get in the Scotland team, because I think David Turnbull is one of those players that can be special, that can have moments of genius and brilliance that can turn games, and that's the kind of player you want in and around the national team. So I really hope that this is like a red letter season for him, that he's able to make a mark and he's able to break into that, and whether or not that will ultimately be at Celtic or he moves to another club in order to further that and to grow as a player remains to be seen. But it's a really important season for him, and I really hope he does well, not just for the sake of that.
You almost forget that he was part of the Euro 2020 squad that actually went to the tournament, and he was one of the players in that, because he's just disappeared off the radar recently. Obviously got the injury, which kind of made him fall out of favour a wee bit at Celtic. Never really got back in after Ange Postecoglou kind of reshaped the team and the squad. So yeah, I mean, he's been a part of the national setup tournament, and you just hope that he can get back in again and push on for the next tournament we hopefully qualify for.
It wasn't a great start for Rangers in their opening day, but it was for Kilmarnock, because they pumped them 1-0. pumped is maybe a bit too much. But, you know, a lot of new players playing in this game from last season. Kilmarnock had 7 new players. Rangers, I think, had 5 of their summer recruits in the starting lineup. And I did see a few Rangers fans kind of surprised not to see the likes of Cantwell in the opening lineup. But at the end of the day, Lions, I think, with the only goal of the game. And it's great for Kilmarnock, who finished 9th last season. It gives a lot of their fans hope that they're not going to have the struggling season that they might have last time. Because I know Armstrong had another good game. And they've got a lot more attacking talent this time coming around.
Cracking start for Kilmarnock. It's a shame that the league's already over. You know, that's it done on day one.
Kilmarnock won the league. But
that, what was really interesting was Kilmarnock played exactly how they've kind of always played and how teams always set up under Derek McInnes. I'm not quite sure what Michael Beale was trying to do with the team that he put out. Dropping Cantwell was wild. I know he hasn't had a great preseason, but no one really has at Rangers. To be honest, like I expected, maybe it's just the nihilism of a football fan, I expected Rangers to drop points because you tend to find when there are a lot of new players coming into a side that it takes a bit of time for them all to gel together. Thinking back to Ange Postecoglou's first couple of months at Celtic, they didn't have some great results in there as well. But I don't think there's any excuse really for the insipid performance that Rangers put in. But it's full praise to Kelly as well, because as the game went on, when you expect these teams potentially to tire, they were the ones that looked much more likely to get a second goal. And it was a cracking refinish from lines nipping in between the defenders as well. So yeah, I think it gives a lot of hope for Kelly going forward this season. I think a bit more settled, you know, third season under Derek McInnes, and they've made some good signings as well. I think Stuart Finlay coming back in, he was defensively excellent at the weekend, back on loan from Oxford United. He knows the club well, he knows the league well. I think that's a great bit of business. I think there's a lot of worrying signs still for Rangers, especially with the big European match coming up on Wednesday, but you know, we'll get into that later on. But yeah, some worrying signs.
Moving on, it was obviously a big day for Dundee back into the Premiership. They, like I said, they've got the flag day, and they got a point as well against Motherwell. It was kind of an interesting game. It was full of chances, full of interesting stories in this game. One of their new signings, Juan Portales, got injured in the 6th minute. It was kind of not a great start for them. And then I loved the commentator in this game when Motherwell took the lead. Was it Theo Bear? He says, "Feed the bear and he will score."
That is rubbish.
Then he followed that up with the Dundee goal scorer, the equaliser, Lyle Cameron. Great wee player, by the way. He says, "The ghost at the back post."
That's so better. Good. More of a fan of that stuff. Yeah, yeah.
What did you guys think of this game?
It was kind of what I was expecting. I kind of thought it'd be honours even in this game. I thought, on hindsight, I didn't see it at the time, but Motherwell actually lucky not to have a penalty given against them. There was a wee kind of controversial moment that VAR missed where Dan Casey looks to have touched the ball while Liam Kelly's holding it. Ball's still in play.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't know if he does it intentionally, as in he's like kind of patting it down, or he's not aware it's there. I don't know what the thinking is, but I think Liam Kelly kind of notices and kind of just moves it to the side and no one kind of picked up on it. So a wee bit lucky there. From a Motherwell perspective, I think it's really exciting to see Lennon Miller get more game time, start another game. Yeah. This boy, I think he's just turned 17. He is one of the youngest players in SPFL history, well, youngest Motherwell scorer, I think it is. He's a really, really exciting prospect. I can't remember if we spoke about him in the past, even maybe towards the end of last season, because I know he was kind of getting some game time towards the end of last season. He's very young, very raw, but he's already looking really just a kind of all-round, really smart and sensible player. Obviously, he's the son of Lee Miller, who has obviously given him a football upbringing his entire life. Having a dad as a professional footballer, so he knows exactly what he's getting into. Mm-hmm. His dad goes to every game. He's in the crowd at Dens Park watching him. He's there all the time supporting him. Very, very interesting talent, because there were a lot of teams coming in for him when he was even before he'd signed professionally at Motherwell. So he could have went down south to big clubs, but I think his dad especially pushed him through to kind of stay at Motherwell, get a good grounding, get the game time, get the experience, and it's a sensible option because it's only going to give him a wealth of experience from it.
I think Lyle Cameron falls under that category. I know he's 20, you know, a good few years over Lennon, but this is a guy who's coming up, stepping up a level for Dundee. He's been part of their youth setup for a long time. He was coming to his end of his contract last season, but he won every single Player of the Year award at the club last season. So he earned himself a new contract. I mean, he's a cracking wee player. He's kind of fox in the box, can play across the whole midfield. I really think he's quite exciting for exciting Scottish midfielder coming through. St Johnstone, they lost 2-0 to Hearts. It's gone from bad to worse for St Johnstone because their League Cup campaign has been dreadful. They lost 4-0 to Stirling Albion at McDermott Park in their last game. And it's, you know, start of a new campaign. And I know it's Hearts, and Hearts were by far the better team. But is it too early to suggest that Stephen McLean is under pressure, Finn? Is it unfair to say he should be under pressure?
I think he is under pressure. Of course, this is kind of what we were saying last week when we were talking about how we think teams will do this season. None of us really expect St Johnstone to have an easy ride this season. It's still very early in the season, but I think there's a lot of worrying signs there for St Johnstone fans already, and their form's not been particularly good. They've kind of dropped off a bit of a cliff since the season where they won the two cups. They've struggled, even under Callum Davidson, who's a legendary manager, and subsequently now under Stephen McLean. I think it's a very tough season, I think, ahead for them. Mm-hmm. Hearts are looking good, though, and I think some of the newcomers, Tagawa, I think Callum Nieuwenhof is a really exciting signing from Western Sydney Wanderers in the A-League.
Read some really good things about him.
Yeah, he had a great season last year, and he's only 22. And obviously it's a well-trodden path now. I think there were four Aussies starting in the Hearts starting lineup at the weekend. So an interesting one, Alex Lowry joining on loan from Rangers for the season. Mm. I think there's a potential there for him to do something similar to Ryan Christie. Aberdeen on loan from Celtic. I think he's that level of player. He really needs to get more full-time football under his belt. He's not going to get that at Rangers. So I think this is a cracking move. And I think Hearts could have a really good player on their hands here. It could be really important this season.
Livy Aberdeen was a 0-0 absolute stinker. Don't know why David Martindale said it was a really good game of football. Maybe one for the purists, I don't know. Hibs St Mirren, however, on Sunday was an absolute corker of a match. A game of two halves, really. Hibs were most of the possession in the first half, but were 2-0 down going into the second half. Weirdly, Michael Mandrin was injured in the warm-up, so Olu Sanya came on. Bagged a goal as well. It was a bit of a mad game, this, really, because Hibs just should have, well, dominated, but had no kind of real aggression in the final third. But in the second half, it was a lot better for them. But St Mirren showed a real, you know, considering Hibs get back to 2-2, for St Mirren to then show that class to keep going to the very end, it's maybe a hallmark of Stephen Robinson as a manager and his teams.
Yeah, I think it was the first time he's won at Easter Road as well. I wasn't surprised to hear there were, like, I missed this game on Sunday, but I wasn't surprised to hear at half-time they were 2-0 up. Then, because I was thinking, right, Hibs, European hangover, St Mirren are kind of scoring for fun in the League Cup right now. They're also very good away on the road as well. A little bit surprised, obviously, the comeback in the second half from Hibs, but I think just to push on, it's the old cliche of being able to hold out, grind out these results, difficult ties away from home. This is the sort of thing that is a difference over the course of a season. And we all kind of tipped St Mirren last week saying they could be one of the teams that actually go on and do well in the top six this season. And that's exactly the sort of results they're going to have to pull off if that is what they're going to do.
Big men are up from the back. El Mahani, right foot. Whipshot. Oh, jeez, he peeps, man.
Right, well, the newest addition to the SPFL roster, the Spartans, have only been around for a few weeks since the promotion from the Lowland League, but within that time, they've absolutely arrived with a bang. They opened their League Cup campaign with a shock 1-0 win over Dundee United. Shock, more like class. But while they couldn't make it out of the group stages, they continued to get people talking.
And not just about their football, they've got an already assembled young team leading the way on supporter culture and homemade tifos. So to find out a bit more about who these kids are, we've got Kenny Cameron, youth work manager at the club, here to bring us up to speed. So Kenny, I mean, tell us from start to finish, what was the, when was this sort of inception of these, you know, club ultras come about, and how excited are you for them?
Well, I think first of all, we're very excited for them. We've got a historic season coming ahead for the club, and they're going to play a massive part, as they did, in helping us secure promotion. Obviously, it was Dougie and the players that achieved that, but I think the players and the management at the club, that we would acknowledge the sort of singing and the noise and atmosphere generated by the young people really played a part. So that was really good. In terms of when it started, I think it's a youth club. At Spartans, if anybody knows anything about Spartans and the community foundation who I work for, we've been embedded in the community for over 15 years. And a big part of that is to work with young people to offer opportunities to help them in their sort of own personal development. And one of the things that became apparent during last season was that this ultras culture has really taken a grip, particularly in the non-league and the lower leagues, where young people really want to get behind their teams. And we were lucky that we had a group of young people who, you know, have a real affinity to Spartans, because we've maybe known them, you know, for the majority of their life. Some of these young people have been coming to Spartans since they were 6 and 7 years old. And when you look at the ultras, they're sort of aged between 10 and 14. So we might have known these young people from primary school, where we work with them in primary delivery and youth work with them there. They might come to the breakfast club or on a Friday night to the youth club or whatever. So we've known them a long time, and youth work is young people led. So when we recognised that there was this wee movement with the young people, that they wanted to really go for this with this ultras group, it's our job as youth workers is to try and help facilitate that. And they've been superb. Well, our job, like I say, youth workers, is to help them if they come up with ideas, just to facilitate it. We're not here to tell them what to do, how to do it. It's to try and make it possible and just support them and give them that wee bit of support where they need it. So as young people led, they've organised themselves. Initially, there's probably a core group. It started off as maybe 16, group of 20-something, maybe 30-something, and maybe 40. That's a core group now, and they're the group that get together regularly. They devise songs, make the banners, the flags. Started off with them cutting in with felt-tip pens on pillowcases and attaching it to bamboo sticks and all that. So it started off, I mean, you talk about grassroots, this is proper community-led and young people-led, and then what happened was they wanted a wee bit of help to take it to another level. And as a result of that, they've done really well, that more and more people sort of join on match day, and atmosphere has been great. So they've been a real asset to the football club, but also to the community foundation as well. And we're really proud of that.
What is it they're called? Is it the Ultras North?
Aye. So they came up with the Ultras North. They're proud to be from North Edinburgh. They want Spartans in name, you know, the Spartans Ultras or Ultras Aberdeen. They found that a wee bit boring, so they wanted to do something a wee bit different. So they came up with Ultras North. They felt it gave them a wee bit of identity. They've been to the North. They had a few name ideas, but some of them sounded, you know, if we think there's connotations with Ultras, some of the names have a wee bit of connotations, perhaps with something else in terms of the 80s sort of football violence, and they didn't want that, because what they're actually trying to do is there's these perceptions and stereotypes of young people that they're trying to change, much in the same way as there's stereotypes around the term ultra. So, you know, people my age, so wee fat baldy guys at 40 odd, look and hear the name ultra, and there's a negative connotation to that, just as same as people look at young people and think negative when they're in groups. And they want to change that perception because it's not a true reflection of young people, and it's not a true reflection of ultras. And the way they're going about it is they're trying to have people go, wow, instead of being scared or making that judgment that it's always a negative. And I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that it's plain sailing. We work in one of the most deprived areas in Scotland, and with that, there are challenges, and our young people face challenges on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, it's not all of the young people, but many of them, for want of a better word, some of them are street kids. They're out in the street all day, every day. And there's behaviours and things that probably aren't socially acceptable that they'll display from time to time. But part of the journey in this group is to try and address that through youth work and through that. It's effectively a youth club, and we're trying to address those social issues with them. And let me give a great example of that, right? So somebody had, the Spartans Football Club have the pride flag around the badge, and somebody had tweeted the club, basically a bunch of homophobic nonsense, and some of the young people had seen that, and one of them came up to me and said, Kenny, we seen a homophobic tweet about the pride flag. So they actually went out and got a pride flag for the next game and stuck it on their banner because they want everybody to feel welcome here. Another example would be when they're going along the walkway just at the back of Poulton here, and a wee old lady cycles along and she stopped, and I thought, oh, she's probably going to get me told that these young people are doing this or doing that. But actually, in fact, she was fully praised and saying, that's fantastic. Listen, I'm singing songs, they're smiling, they're happy, and that's the perception that this wee group want to portray.
That's a testament to the work that you guys do in the community, because the beauty and the romance of lower league football really too is that connection between club and community, and these lads seem to be so buying into that. The banners are, the tifos are so well made, but it's that sense of they're building a community themselves as well. It's great for their growth as young adults as well.
You're right, that connection between the community and the local football clubs is massive, and it's something we didn't want to lose as we progress into professional football. It's been a dream for so many people for so long, but the football comes second to the impact in the community, and that will always be the case. The people that work here wake up every day determined to make a difference in North Edinburgh, and the young people have bought into the success of the football club on the back of, like I say, the relationship that's been built over sort of 10, 15 years they've been here. So we want to, look, there's no denying, if we can use it to build a fan base for Spartans going forward, we're in a tricky situation in Edinburgh where you've got, you know, you've got the big club, you've got Hearts, you've got Hibs, you've got Edinburgh City to compete with, and then there's also your civil service strollers, your Craig Roystons, there's a lot of football clubs, so you're competing with a lot, and if we can, you know, be these young guys, even second teams that they come along to the home games and stuff, and hopefully then build a sort of fan base going forward for the club, then that would be fantastic.
And what's the kind of process been like in terms of like fundraising, making the TIFOs?
Actually, for the TIFO that we had at the weekend, it's had some great feedback. We worked with Sarah Jane Embroidery, because one of the things that people don't see about this, they'll see the TIFO, they'll comment on that and think that's great in terms of it's just at the football, but there's a wider thing to the Ultras group, and that, again, it's a youth work provision. So youth work by definition is informal learning. So what people won't see is, you know, Sarah being in and working with young people, teaching them how you sew the fabrics together, and then designing how to make a proper circle by using something in the middle on the string and all this. And it's not something that I'm great at, but they learn that. But also tied to that, we've got a number of them young people perhaps aren't attending school, maybe as much as they should. They're maybe on part-time timetables or maybe non-attenders. A lot of them have got seriously chaotic home lives, that's not for this discussion. But what we're finding is when, for example, when they've done their first banner, it said North Edinburgh's football team. It was 10 metres long. It was one of the lyrics for one of the songs that they created. They worked out that to fit that onto the 10-metre banner, they had 33.3 centimetres to fit each letter into that banner. So there's maths right there. You know what I mean? I genuinely wouldn't have thought to do that. They worked out, like, okay, we want to get this looking good, so how many? They were doing some fundraising. You asked about that. People have really bought into what they're doing, so they did a wee bit of fundraiser. They went through buckets. People really supported that. They then counted the money, and they're counting money. There's numeracy. They're literally stacking money up and putting the 20 pences with 20 pences, and et cetera, and piling up and counting it, and then they're keeping a note of how much, because we're then banking it for them, so they're seeing that side of it. We don't want any of the young people getting on. You took that money and you went up to the key store and you bought sweeties and Prime and whatnot, you know what I mean, and spent the money that we'll fundraise, so it goes into the bank account. They then identify what flags they want to buy. We then get together, they design it on the laptop, they design the flags, We'll order it through the club account, so there's our transactions and it's all transparent, so they're learning that side. So there's so much. The songs, they've written a songbook. Again, a lot of these young people aren't attending school, so this is literacy. They're literally writing down. And if I showed you some examples of some of the handwriting, it would show you maybe perhaps some of the level that some of the young people are operating at, but it's only going to get better by them doing that and then transferring it on the laptop, and they've made like an e-book, their songs. And again, I'm not going to say it's all rosy. There's some songs that have some swear words and whatnot, but we've got to be realistic. They're young people, and they're young people from Poulton and Muirhouse, and it's natural for them to use that language on occasion, and people might like it or no, but they're at the football as well, and when they go to other games, this is what they hear. So we're trying to get them away for that a wee bit, because I've got some great football songs just supporting the team. It's a slow process, and it's informal learning over a period of time, and we will accept that they will make mistakes. We will accept that they will have moments where they maybe let themselves down a wee bit, maybe in the community or whatever. But we're no bad at them. That's why we're here. We're here to try and help them with that. So if they do make a mistake, they've got that support network of us and the other ultras, because they came up with almost like an ultras contract that they had to agree to in terms of behaviours in the ground. So no pyro. It's illegal.
Magic.
They loved to have pyro. These things, but they've come up with that and how they're representing themselves in the community. And on the whole, they've done really well. One or two issues, absolutely, but they're then supporting each other in terms of how you turn that around for being a negative and a positive, so that it doesn't happen again.
Like you're saying, no pyro, but they do anything to get around that issue.
Aye, so they'll be, again, see, young people, right? I've been a youth worker for 20 years, and nothing surprises me. A lot of people would think, well, that's incredible they're doing this, but I know their potential because I've seen it so many times. So what they're saying is, look, we can't have pyro, what can we do? All right, we'll get a smoke machine. We'll fundraise for a smoke machine that can be set at the back of the stand, and you can put a colour hotler over it, and we'll try and create something like that, because that's legal, you know, and I'll add, it's just what can we do as opposed to what we can't do. So I love the mindset that, okay, that's an obstacle, but actually, what's the workaround? And so there's problem solving, there's critical thinking. Again, people think there's TIFOs and whatnot, and I mean, again, the TIFO the other day, let's be honest, our level was terrific. A lot of work went in it. Even there, right, the how to get it to float up on an 8. So I didn't know about these things, but they told me it floats up on an 8. They worked out the engineering, I suppose. You're getting 3 cables and how they're going to fit through and how they're going to pull it up and how they're going to time it. So that all came for them. And we're just getting the platform as the foundation and as a football club to sort of express that. And again, as a youth work too, I'm delighted. So, no, it's going really well.
I've never seen Laura smile so wide. This is the kind of stuff she utterly adores. Laura runs her own. I think you've got a TIFO group as well for the Scotland.
For Scotland national team as well, but I mean, you guys are putting us to shame because this is so impressive the amount of work you're doing. I think you guys should come in and teach us how to do it.
Sounds like
we'll
a great meet.
We'll set up the capos all night to have a go, but there was a hand of you. We didn't have to take the through, you know. Again, this is part of a wider loaded project at Spartans, you know. So that's one group, it's Ultras group. But again, you see, when you're talking about that culture, they've designed their own T-shirts. They made their own logo. There's graphic design. Amazing. They're now putting them on T-shirts that they sell towards supporting the fundraising. When they did, they have money. I have to say, the club were fantastic. The players and the club paid for their buses to Brechin and to Albion Rovers, including the players buying them lunch. So they, you know, the players really value what the young team bring, you know, to the club. And the young team love them back.
The reaction's so good, Kenny. It's kind of almost like, you know, how big is it going to go? Like, I'm really excited to see the next TIFO. Can you give us a wee sample of what it might be, or is it early doors yet?
Well, they've already set in a number of designs, and they're doing a 2. One will be spectacular, and one might mean quite a bit to one of the players. You know, Laura, you'll know that they're no cheap to do these things. So they need to fundraise again, but that's part of it, because in the fundraising, there's planning, there's organisation, there's teamwork, there's event management. So again, it's this wider thing than simply turning up to the game on the Saturday and you know, if you're not bouncing, you're not sparring, say all eight, you know, and banging your drum. There's so much more to it than that, and we'll support them as best we can. So they're a great wee bunch, and we're really proud of them.
That's the success of this, isn't it? Young people having a focus and being really, you know, determined to make a success of something. It's really, really special to hear about the group that you guys are looking after. It's such a nice story, and I can't wait to see it all progress throughout the season.
regrets, nor it's good laugh on it. So
I didn't find it funny.
Right, well, the draw for the UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Europa Conference League took place on Monday, and the standout real story came out with was with Aston Villa potentially going to Hibs, which would mean, of course, John McGinn and his homecoming to Hibs. But this is only if Hibernian can get past Luzerne from Switzerland. Quite a mouthwatering one, this, because, you know, very, very big if for sure, Laura. But do you think the hopes should be high for this?
Like, you'd never know what sort of Hibs you're going to get.
No.
So it's very difficult to get excited about this. It's a really tasty tie if they can get past Luzerne. This is going to be amazing. I've got a friend who's an Aston Villa fan, and his reaction to the draw was, you wait all this time to get to Europe and we're going to bloody Scotland. And I'm thinking, yeah, get it up you. And I hope you're miserable after. But it's a really strange thing because I never want to see John McGinn miserable, but I want to see Hibs get through to the group stages. So for this one, he's just going to have to take it on the chin. I really hope that this is a kind of miserable trip back to Eastern Road for him, unfortunately.
Love that.
We're getting a wee bit ahead of ourselves there.
Rangers, Finn, could be a kind of deja vu if they can get past Servette, which I think their first leg is on Wednesday night. So anyone listening to this on Thursday, you'll know if they've got a better chance or not. But yeah, it could be a deja vu playing PSV or who was the other team, Finn?
Sturm Graz, which would be interesting because if they got to play Sturm Graz, they might be coming up against a very familiar face in Max Johnson, who's just signed from Motherwell, and whose dad, Alan Johnson, played the last time Rangers faced Austrian opposition, which was Sturm Graz as well, I think in the group stages about 20 odd years ago. I think it'll be tricky actually to get past Servette because Servette beat Genk in the round before, and Genk were already talking about looking forward to playing Rangers. Servette were not expected to get through. It was also even more surprising because Servette in the second leg had a player sent off after 7 minutes and had 10 men for the entire game and extra time and ended up winning on penalties. So it's interesting Rangers struggling so much to break down a side like Kilmarnock at the weekend because Servette are very well organised, very hardworking, maybe not hugely talented, but it will be really difficult and Rangers will need to get a result at Ibrox to take out to Switzerland. Otherwise, there's no point even looking ahead to PSV or Sturm Graz.
Yeah, really interesting. Even Malik Tillman could be at PSV by the time if Rangers get to that point as well, which would be an interesting one. Aberdeen, they're going to play either Vilnius of Lithuania or the Swedish team Häcken in the Europa League playoffs. And Aberdeen actually beat Häcken 5-3 in aggregate in 2021 under Stephen Glass. So I guess they'd maybe want to go there again. Really, really tough. What about Hearts, though? They could get Hajduk Split from Croatia or Pauk in Greece if they get past Rosenborg. But that's a tough tie, Laura, as well. Rosenborg are no pub team at all. They've got a great European history. I wonder what you think Hearts might do.
Yeah.
They're looking good so far.
I think it's actually, they've got very good history, maybe not so much recent years as strong as they used to be, but this is a very good tie for Hearts. The Rosenborg leg, if they get through, very, very difficult. I went to Hajduk Split a few years back when I worked at Coppa 90. Brilliant. It was the Eternal Derby that I went to and covered, and the atmosphere is class at their stadium. It's very, very heated. Oh, yeah. I think Hearts fans would very much enjoy going there for the experience. Wouldn't put it past Greece to be actually quite similar in terms of how heated it could be. That's a very, very difficult playoff if they get that far. But if you're going to see off Rosenborg, you're putting yourself in a strong position.
Yeah, indeed. Well, that is kind of it for another podcast. Just before we go, we've got our own Scottish Football Show League on the Fantasy Football Scotland. And yeah, Finn, your team is honking.
Howling. Yeah, honking. Absolutely minging from the first week. Just to give you a showcase of how bad my first week's gone, my highest point scorer this weekend was Mikey Devlin at Livy, who scored 6 points. So yeah,
in a 0-0 draw.
Not a very good start.
Laura, you're not doing too much better either, are you?
Utterly pathetic. I think I got a bit cocky leaving it till last minute, and then the budget just absolutely screwed me. Couldn't get half the players I wanted. My highest was Lauren Shankland, so I'll live off that one, but and Mark O'Hara as well. They both got me 14, but apart from that, utterly pathetic across the board.
You're 219th in the Scottish Football League. Finn, you're 353rd. Where am I? I am 183rd, a lot higher than you two, which is good. But who's top of our league is Right Boys. We're booked is top on 87 points.
Jeez.
Well played, whoever you are. Putting us to shame. But yeah, nah, if you didn't captain Kyogo
for the hash,
at the weekend,
yeah,
you're an absolute numpty. I went for a full Rangers defence practically, and I got stumped. Unbelievable. Right, that's it for episode 2 or episode 3? I can't remember. Brand new season. Loads of technical difficulties, VAR frailties, just loads of stuff going on, and it's wild. We're trying to get our calendars in order. We don't know when we're doing things. It's going to be great fun this season. I can't wait. If you've got any great stories, you can get in touch with us on Twitter, on Facebook, and all the social media platforms. And you can even watch us on YouTube as well. So go and do a little bit of that. I guess there's only one thing to do now, and that's to tell you to go and listen to something else now. Bye.